Welcome to Zichru Daf Simani. I'm Rabbi Avram Goldar, and today we're Masechet Shabbos, Daf Tzariv Vav. So the three topics we're going to focus on. Number one, in the opening mission of the 10th parak, which discusses cases of transferring by throwing, zrika, or handing over a hoshata, it is taught that if one hands over or throws an object from one balcony of Rishos Yachid to another balcony of Rishos Yachid on the other side of a Rishos Rabim, he's exempt. Whereas if the two balconies were on the same side of the Rishos Rabim, he would be exempt for throwing the item, but liable for handing it over. The Mishnah explains that the Malach of HaHutzah is fashioned after the Avodos HaLevim, the work of the Levim, who transferred the Mishkan's beams onto wagons in Rishus HaRabim. Since the Malach was done specifically through handing over, one is not liable for throwing. And since the transfer was done along the length of Rishus HaRabim, one is not liable for handing an object across a Rishus HaRabim. Point number two, the Gemara seeks a source in the Malach of HaHutzah and quotes Rabbi Yochanan, who says it's one of the Pasuk in the Parsha of the collection of the donations of the Mishkan. V'yitzav Moshe v'yaviru kol b'machane. And Moshe commanded, and they sounded the proclamation in the camp. Moshe was standing in the Machane Levia, which considered a Rishus Rabim, and was telling Bnei Israel not to take out and bring materials from their homes, which was Yachid, into the Rishus Rabim. Rabbi Yochanan learns that that day was a Shabbos from the Gezer Shabbat. It says here, v'yaviru kol b'machane, and they sounded a proclamation in the camp. And it says regarding Yom Kippur of Yovel, v'havart the shofar trua, and you shall sound a broken blast on the shofar. Just as Yom Kippur is a day of prohibition, so to hear in this pasuk, it's a day of prohibition, a prohibition of malacha, meaning Shabbos. And point number three, the Gemara brings various opinions regarding which malacha, the makoshish eitzim, the gatherer of wood, transgressed and made him liable in the midbar for transgressing Shabbos. Rav Yudah said in the name of Shmuel, he was a mavir, a transfer of wood for amos in Rishus HaRabim. Atana Braisa taught he was a tolish, a detacher of wood that was still growing. Rav Acha, the son of Rav Yochanan, said he was a ma'amer, a gatherer of detached and scattered wood. The Gemara identifies him as Tzalafcha, the father of five daughters who inherited him in the Midbar. So once again, the three points are, number one, in the opening mission of the 10th parak, which discusses cases of trancing by throwing, zrika, or handing over hoshata, it is taught that if one hands over or throws an object from one balcony of Rishos Yachid to another balcony of Rishos Yachid on the other side of Rishos Rabim, he's exempt. Whereas if the two balconies were on the same side of the Rishos Rabim, he would be exempt for throwing the item, but liable for handing it over. The Mishnah explains that the Malach of HaHutzah is fashioned after the Avodos HaLevim, the work of the Levim, who transferred the Mishkan's beams onto the agalos, onto wagons in Rishos Rabim. Since the Malach was done specifically through handing over, one is not liable for throwing. And since the transfer was done along the length of Rishos Rabim, one is not liable for handing an object across a Rishos HaRabim. Point number two, the Gemara seeks the source of the Malach of HaHutzah and quotes Rabbi Yochanan, who says it's one from the Pasuk in the Parsha of the collection of donations for the Mishkan. V'yitzav Moshe v'yaviru kol b'machane, and Moshe commanded, and they sounded the proclamation in the camp. Moshe was standing in the Machane Levia, which was considered a Rishos HaRabim, and was telling Bnei Yisrael not to take up and bring materials from their homes, which are Rishos Yachid, into the Rishos HaRabim. Rabbi Yochanan learns that that day was a Shabbos from a Gezer Shabbat. It says here, "Vayaviru kol b'machane," and they sounded a proclamation in the camp. And it says regarding Yom Kippur of Yovel, "Va'avar teshofar trua," and you shall sound a broken blast on the shofar. Just as Yom Kippur is a day of prohibition from Malacha, so too here in this pasuk it's a day of prohibition, meaning Shabbos. And point number three, the Gemara brings various opinions regarding which Malacha, the makoshish eitzim, the gatherer of wood, transgressed that made him liable in the midbar for transgressing Shabbos. Rav Yudah said in the name of Shmuel, he was a ma'abir, a transfer of wood for amos in Rishos HaRabim. Atana Braisa taught he was a tolish, a detacher of wood that was still growing. And Rav Acha, the son of Rabbi Yaakov, said he was a ma'amir, a gatherer of detached and scattered wood. The Gemara identifies him as Tzalafcha, the father of five daughters who inherited him in the Midbar. All right, so now we're going to go with our Simon for Tzadi Vav. And in this case, the winning suggestion was clearly a commander, a sergeant, a drill sergeant, and it would have been perfect for Tzadi Vav, but I used Tzadi Hey as a tank commander, and I don't want any confusion. So I'm going to use a variation that was suggested by Shalom Fried from Woodmere, who suggested a government proclamation, and he put in parentheses, like, hear ye, hear ye. So we're going to have a town crier giving a government proclamation. So thank you, Shalom, for your suggestion, and thank you, everybody, for all your suggestions, and here goes. The town crier proclaimed that no balls were to be thrown from balcony to balcony, while the king's wagons were loaded up with donations and with wood gathered for the royal bonfire. Once again, slow motion. The town crier proclaimed, town crier proclaiming, that means Ron Duff, Tzadi Vav. The town crier proclaimed that no balls would be thrown from balcony to balcony, which reminds us, in the opening mission, the 10th Perek, which discusses cases of transferring by throwing, Zriko or handing over Ushata, it's taught that if one hands over or throws an object from one balcony in Rishus Yachid to another balcony in Rishus Yachid on the other side of Rishus Rabim, he is exempt. Whereas if the two balconies were on the same side of the Rishus Rabim, he would be exempt for throwing the item, but liable for handing it over. The mission explains that the Malach of Hotzah is fashioned after the Avodas Levim, the work of the Levim, who transfer the Mishkan's beams onto wagons, Rishus Rabim. Since the Malach was done specifically through handing over, one is not liable for throwing. And since the transfer was done along the length of Rishus Rabim, one is not liable for handing an object across Rishus Rabim. So the town crier proclaimed that no balls would be thrown from balcony to balcony, while the king's wagons were loaded up with donations, which reminds the Gemara seeks the source of the Malachim Hotzah, and quotes Rabbi Yochanan, who says it's learned from the Pasuk and the Parsha of the collection of the donations from the Mishkan, V'yatzav Moshe v'yavir kol b'machaneh, and Moshe commanded, and they sounded the proclamation in the camp. Moshe was standing in the Machne Levia, which was considered Rishus Rabim, and was telling Bnei Israel not to take and bring materials from their homes, which were Rishus Yachid, into the Rishus Rabim. Rabbi Yochanan learns that that day was a Shabbos from a Gezer Shabbat. It says here, Vayaviru Koba Machane, and they sounded a proclamation in the camp. And it says regarding the Yom Kippur of Yovel, Vavarta Shofar Trua, and you shall sound a broken blast on the shofar. Just as Yom Kippur is a day of prohibition from Malachas, so too here in this Pasuk, it's a day of prohibition, meaning Shabbos. So the town crier proclaimed that no balls would be thrown from balcony to balcony, while the king's wagons were loaded up with donations and with wood gathered for the royal bonfire, which reminds us, the Gemara brings various opinions regarding which Malach and the Mekoshesh Eitzim, the gatherer of wood, transgressed that made him liable in the Midbar for transgressing Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, he was a Mavir, a transfer of wood for Amos and Rishus Rabim. Atan and Braisa taught he was a Tolish, a detacher of wood that was still growing. Rav Acha, the son of Rabbi Yaakov, said that he was a Ma'amer, a gatherer of detached and scattered wood. The Gemara identifies him as Tzalafcha, the father of five daughters, who inherited him in the Midbar. So once again, the town crier proclaimed that no balls would be thrown from balcony to balcony, while the king's wagons were loaded up with donations and with wood gathered for the royal bonfire. All right, now it's time for Farba Bach Hazara, Daf Tzadi Beis. So the symbol for Tzadi Beis is a turtle. So the victorious turtle, that means we're on Daf Tzadi Beis. The victorious turtle held his trophy high above 10 tefachim in Rishus Rabim, which reminds us. The next mission of the Perek states that one is only liable for carrying if one carried in a normal manner. Including the list of normal forms of carrying is carrying on one's shoulders, for that is how Bnei Kahas carried the kelim of the Mishkan. Rabbi Elazar learns from the carrying of Bnei Kahas, who carried the kelim at a height of more than 10 tefachim from the ground, that if one transfers a load from one Rishus to another by hand and keeps it in the air more than 10 tefachim above the ground, that he is liable. Rashi explains that even though 10 tefachim above Rishus Rabim is considered a Makom Patur, and if one were to throw an object in Rishus Rabim and it got stuck on the side of the wall 10 tefachim above the ground, he would be exempt. In this case, he's liable because this is the way Bnei Kahas transported the Kalim. So the victorious turtle held his trophy high above 10 tefachim in Rishus Rabim and guarded his winnings in front of him, which reminds us, the following Mishnah states that if one intended to take an object in front of him, but in mid-transfer it slipped behind him, he is exempt. However, if he intended to take the object out behind him and it slipped in front of him, he is liable. Rav explains that in the first case, when the person carried the object out in front of him, his intent was a good shmir, to guard it well. Since it slipped behind him, it was guarded poorly. Since his initial machshava, his thought was not fulfilled, Rashi says it's a case of misasek. In the second case, where the person carried out an object behind him, he only intended a minimal guarding. When it slipped in front, it resulted in even better guarding, making him liable since he was pleased with the result. So the victorious turtle held his trophy high above 10 tefachim in Rishus Rabim and guarded his winnings in front of him, while the defeated rabbit carried a massive carrot home together with his friend. Which reminds us, the following Mishnah introduces a Machlokas Tanaim in a case where two people carry out an object that neither individual could carry alone. The Tanakhama holds that they are both liable. Rabbi Shimon says they're both exempt. The Gemara brings up Braisa that states that if one person was capable of carrying the object alone and the other one was not capable, then everyone will agree that he is liable. The Gemara on Daf Tzadik Gimel will clarify which one is liable. Daf Tzadik Gimel. So the symbol of Tzadik Gimel is a chugga chugga choo choo train. So here goes. The little train, that means we're on Daf Tzadik Gimel. The little train that pushed the big train up the mountain was insulted when it was called Amir Misayeya, which reminds us. Rav Chisda stated that in a case where two people carrying an object into Rishus Rabim, and one was strong enough to carry it by himself and the other was not, then the one who was able to carry it by himself is liable since he accomplished the entire action, and the one who was unable is exempt since he didn't accomplish anything. When Rav Hamnuna suggests that the weaker person was a masayeya, an aid to the stronger person, Rav Chisra responded, masayeya ein bo mamish, merely aiding someone is not significant. The Gemara brings a number of proofs that support Rav Chisra's view, the final one being that if a kohen is mekabel dam, he receives blood of an offering using his right hand, and his left hand aids his right hand in holding the kli, the avoda is valid. Even though an avoda that is done with a left hand is invalid, in this case it was merely a masayeya, which is insignificant. So the little train that pushed the big train up the mountain was insulted when it was called a mir masayeya. So it crashed through the door the two men were holding to trap a deer, which reminds us the Braisa on Sadi Beis Amud Beis says that according to Rabbi Meir, if two people carried out an object together and they both were strong enough to carry out individually, they are still both liable. The Gemara asks if they individually need to carry out one full shear, or is one full shear sufficient to make them both liable? The Gemara brings a number of proofs to support the opinion that only one full shear is required. One proof is from a Mishnah that states, if a deer entered a house and two people who are both capable individually of closing the door close the door together, then they are both liable for the malach of trapping. From the fact that the Mishnah does not require each of them to trap a full measure indicates that one full measure is sufficient for the two of them. So the little train that pushed the big train up the mountain was insulted when it was called a mir masayeya. So it crashed through the door two men were holding to trap a deer and went back to pulling a kli, carrying a little pea. Which reminds us, the next mission of the Perek states that if one transfers food that is less than the required shear in a kli, the person is exempt from carrying even the kli, since a kli tefelelo. The kli is secondary to the food. The Miri explains that since the kli is a mere accessory, it's subordinate to the food, and since there's no liability for the primary object, there's no liability for the subordinate object. Tav Sadi Dalet. So the symbol of Sadi Dalet is a hunter. So here goes. The hunter, that means run Tav Sadi Dalet. The hunter was having a rough day when he dropped the live squirrel he was carrying because it felt so heavy. Which reminds us, the Mishnah Daf Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis stated that if one carries a live person on a bed, he's exempt for carrying the person and even for taking out the bed, because the bed is secondary to the person. The Gemara tends to prove that this is the minority opinion of Rabbi Nassim based on a brisa of the Tot, that if one carried out animals into Rishus Rabbim, either dead or alive, one is liable. Rabbi Nassim, however, disagrees and says that although one is liable for carrying a dead animal, he's exempt for carrying a living animal, shachai noset tzatzmo, because a living creature supports its own weight. This is like our case in the Mishnah of carrying a live person on a bed. Rabbi says that it's possible the Rabbanan also hold that in regards to a person, hachai noset tzatzmo, and they only disagree with Rabbi Nassim in the case of animals, because animals stiffen themselves to try to escape, and as Rashi explains, they actually feel heavier. Therefore, they cannot be considered as if they carry themselves. So the hunter was having a rough day when he dropped the live squirrel he was carrying, because it felt so heavy, plucking out one of its three white hairs, which reminds us, if a Mitzorah plucked out one of two white hairs in the afflicted area of his skin to prevent himself from being declared Tamei, he has transgressed a negative commandment. There's a Malchokas and Marayim regarding a case where Mitzorah plucked out one of three white hairs in the afflicted area of his skin. Rav Nachman holds that he's liable because his action is potentially consequential, for if one more hair becomes removed, the tumor will depart. Rav Sheshes says he's not liable since the tumor is still present with the two remaining white hairs. Therefore, the act was inconsequential. So the hunter was having a rough day when he dropped the live squirrel he was carrying because it felt so heavy, plucking out one of its three white hairs, which got snagged on his partially detached fingernail. Which reminds us, it was taught in an amended brace that Rabbi Shimon Elazar says that fingernails or cuticles that have become detached most of the way may be removed by hand, but it's rabbinically forbidden to be done with a kli, with an instrument. If they did not become detached most of the way, then removing them by hand is rabbinically forbidden, and removing them with an instrument would make one liable to bring a chatas. Rabbi Bar Chana said in the name of Yochanan that removing them is only allowed where the cuticles have become detached toward the top of the finger and are peeling back toward the base of the nail, because this causes considerable pain. Daf Sadihei, so the symbol of Sadihei is a Tzahal tank commander. So here goes. The tank commander, that means run Daf Sadihei. The tank commander told the woman who braided hair for a living, which reminds us, Rabbi Yoboa said, as explained to him in the name of Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chinina, the one who braids or fixes her hair on Shabbos is liable for bona, building. The Gemara asks if braiding can be considered building. The Gemara brings a proof that it is from Rabbi Shimon ben Asi, who explained the pasuk, Yivan Hashem Elokim Eset Tzela, and Hashem God built the side he had taken from man into a woman, that Kosh Baruch Hu braided Chava's hair and brought her to Adam, for in the cities by the sea they called the braider a banyasa, a builder. So the tank commander told the woman who braided hair for a living that he needed her perforated flower pots for targa practice, which reminds us, the next Mishnah states that if one plucks a plant from an atzitz nakuv, a perforated flower pot, on Shabbos, he's liable, but he's exempt if it was unperforated. Rabbi Shimon says one is exempt in both cases. Rashi explains that according to the Tanakhama, in the case of the perforated pot, since the plant draws nourishment from the ground, it's considered attached to the ground. Plucking would therefore violate the malach of tolish, plucking, which is a told of kotzer, harvesting. So the Ten Commander told the woman who braided hair for a living that he needed her perforated flower pots for targa practice to master blasting holes of five different sizes. Which reminds us, Rava said there are five different measures with regards to perforations in an earthenware kli. A hole large enough to let out a liquid will render a shard no longer susceptible to tumma, since it no longer has a use. A larger hole that will enable a liquid to seep in will render a kli unfit to be used for the mechatis, because the pasuk says that a kli needs to be used for the mechatis, and this size hole makes it that it's not considered a proper kli. A larger hole, the size of a small root, makes the kli a natzitz nakub, a perforated pot, and the seeds inside are therefore considered attached to the ground and cannot become tameh. A larger hole, the size of an olive, will render an earthenware vessel no longer susceptible to tuma, since it's typically no longer usable. However, if someone designates the kli to store pomegranates, then they are still makabel tuma. And a hole the size of a pomegranate will render a kli no longer susceptible to tuma, even was designated to be used to hold pomegranates. However, if it's surrounded by a sealed cover and is inside a tent together with a dead person, it will prevent tuma from entering the interior unless the majority of the kli is broken. Rashi explains that tuma can only enter a kli through an opening and not through a hole in its side. All right, now it's time to conclude with our pop quiz of 10 questions plus the three bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Number one, which daf do we learn that a mesayeya imbo mamish? That's on daf Sadi Gimel. Good. Number two, which daf do we have a machlokes regarding eged kli shmei eged? That's on daf Sadi Av. Good. Number three, which daf do we have a machlokes regarding what the avera was for the mekoshesh eitzim? That's on daf Sadi Vav. Good. Number four, which daf do we have a machlokes regarding when the aseret hadibros were given? That's on daf Pei Vav. Good. Number five, which daf do we learn that the source for the malach of a hotzah comes from the nedavos for the mishkan? That's on daf Tzadi Vav. Good. Number six, which daf do we learn that braiding hair is the malach of bona? That's on daf Tzadi Hei. Good. Number seven, which daf do we discuss achai nose etz atzmo? That's on daf Tzadi Dod. Good. Number eight, which daf do we learn that one is chai if they carry something above 10 tefachim in Rishus Rabin? That's on daf Tzadi Beis. Good. Number nine, which daf do we learn there were five different sized holes when it came to a kli cheres? That's on daf Tzadi Hei. Good. And find number 10, which daf do we learn about Yitzhak's defense of Bnei Yisrael? That's on daf Pei Tes. Good. And now we go to the three bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Which daf do we discuss or have a machlokes regarding the origins of tefillah of Shmona Esrei? That's on daf Chavav. Good. Number two, which daf do we learn about when one should bow during Shmona Esrei? It depends if it's a Hedyot, a Kohen Gadol, a Melech. That's on daf Ramadad. Good. And finally, number three, which daf do we learn about the deposing of Rabban Gamliel as Nasi of the Sanhedrin? That's on daf Chav Zayin. Excellent. All right, that concludes our pop quiz, plus the three bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldberg from Zichu, wishing you a great day and great learning.